Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next 2 half-hour segments, we're going to update various stories that I've been covering in connection with Germany, both German corporate acquisitions in the United States and elsewhere, the coming of the European Monetary Union, something that I'm going to be covering, devoting at least 2 half-hour segments exclusively to, and also the reemergence of German fascism, something that, sadly, the center-left government that was recently elected in Germany, the Schröder government, does not appear to be stemming to the extent that one might have hoped. We're also going to update to a certain extent the Serpent's Walk book that I've analyzed in the past, and we're also going to talk about the growing control of corporate Germany over American publishing. Research credit on the first article goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from the Financial Times of London of November 10th of 1998. This is an article by Edward Luce, L-U-C-E, in London. It's headlined, Fund Managers Predict Euro Will Soon Rival Strength of Dollar. Bear in mind that in a half-hour segment entitled The Coming of the European Monetary Union, I discussed the European Monetary Union as the fulfillment of the plans of pan-German theoretician Friedrich Liszt, spelled L-I-S-T, who in the 1840s basically developed the root concept of the European Union as a pan-European trade bloc governed and dominated by Germany as a vehicle for unseating Great Britain as the dominant power on Earth. That was in the 1840s. That plan is essentially being realized now at the turn of the 20th and 21st centuries. However, it is, of course, the United States that is a dominant power on Earth, and it is the United States that this particular plan is aimed at unseating. And in particular, I think the euro, if it's a weak currency, is going to hurt the U.S. economy by causing a flight to the dollar by currency speculators, making American manufactured exports too expensive for people in other countries to buy. If it is a strong currency, as this article predicts, it is going to be very damaging to the United States, because it is going to bring a lot of the economic chickens that we have been roosting for many years home to roost, because we will no longer able to borrow against the dollars being held as reserve currency abroad. And that is the prediction that is made in this article. Again, Financial Times of London, November 10th, 1998, on page 16. We read, Fund managers predict euro will soon rival strength of dollar. Not good news for the United States. Global fund managers now believe the euro will be a strong currency in relation to the U.S. dollar, and will soon rival the dollar as the preferred currency for debt issuance. These findings, contained in a report issued by Deutsche Bank today, stem from the largest survey yet conducted on global investor views on Europe's future single currency. Quote, investors were worried that a broad European monetary union, which included Spain and Italy, would mean a weak euro, said Ifti Islam, I-S-L-A-M, a senior economist at Deutsche Bank. Quote, however, this view has altered sharply, unquote. Economists say the change in attitude towards the euro has come with the realization that the eurozone will have a large structural trade surplus, estimated at $100 billion, or 1.5% of the eurozone's gross domestic product. The U.S., by contrast, is expected to record a trade deficit of about $140 billion in 1998. Italy and Spain regularly post trade surpluses, indicating their membership of the first wave of EMU could help strengthen the exchange value of the future single currency. In addition, the European Central Bank is expected to take a more hawkish stance on inflation than the U.S. Federal Reserve, implying that monetary policy will be tighter in the eurozone and in the U.S., according to Deutsche Bank. A total of 193 global funds, including a number of central banks, took part in the survey, representing $7,500 billion worth of funds, or about 25% of total worldwide funds. A large majority of U.S. fund managers, which collectively almost $2,000 billion worth of funds under management, said the euro would have a strong exchange value vis-a-vis the U.S. dollar. In addition, 73% of the investors polled, including a majority of U.S. fund managers, said the euro would rival the U.S. dollar as the preferred currency for debt issuance within 5 years. As central banks are among the main investors in bonds, this implies that the euro could also rival the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency by 2003. At the moment, about 50% of all international bonds are denominated in U.S. dollars, compared with about 25% in eurozone currencies. And again, that is not good news in all likelihood for the American economy and for the United States as a whole, bearing in mind that the European Monetary Union is the realization, the concretization of the plans formulated by Friedrich Liszt for German world domination and for unseating Great Britain as the dominant power on Earth. That is now a role that is enjoyed by the United States. Speaking of Deutsche Bank, it has recently acquired the basically Bankers Trust, and that makes Deutsche Bank / Bankers Trust the largest financial institution on earth, and this will enable German corporations to capitalize a great many potential moves. An editorial about that appeared in the New York Times of Saturday, November 28th of 1998. This is an editorial, Banks Without Boundaries, and it reads in part, "The global financial market can move trillions of dollars around the world within minutes, but the major players are usually viewed as being from one country or another. Even those companies that operate in many countries, such as Citigroup or Merrill Lynch, are still seen as basically American. Now, Deutsche Bank, Germany's largest bank and the second biggest in Europe, proposes to buy Bankers Trust, the seventh largest American bank, for $9.7 billion in cash. If approved by regulators and shareholders, the merger would create the world's largest financial institution and perhaps the first multinational financial juggernaut." Please note that this makes Deutsche Bank Bankers Trust the largest financial institution on earth and perhaps the first international financial juggernaut. A similar corporate acquisition has just been made by the Hoechst Company, H-O-E-C-H-S-T. That is one of the former member companies of the IG Farben Nazi chemical cartel, a company that wielded incalculably great influence, dominant influence in Nazi Germany, that whose member companies continue to wield profound influence around the world. And by the way, the American corporate elements that helped to capitalize Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, part of what I have termed a transatlantic financial and industrial axis, had very, very close relations with IG Farben. The Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the economic component of what I have termed the Underground Reich, quite literally the Third Reich gone underground. I realize that'll appear to be nuts to uninitiated listeners, but it sadly is a fact. Numerous archive shows attest to that, including RFA 37 and Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce. The deadly Bormann Flight Capital Organization is very closely connected with the various member companies of IG Farben, as it is to corporate Germany. We're going to talk about the Bormann Organization in a minute. The following is from the Los Angeles Times business section of November 26th of 1998. This is an article from the LA Times Wire Services at Stateline of Frankfurt, and headlined, "Hoechst confirms merger talks with Rhône Poulenc." That's capital R-H-O-N-E-P-O-U-L-E-N-C. It reads in part, "Confirming weeks of speculation, German drug and chemical maker Hoechst said Wednesday that it is discussing a merger with Rhône Poulenc of France, a union that would create the world's largest life sciences company. The Bankers Trust Deutsche Bank merger will create the world's largest financial institution. The Hoechst Rhône Poulenc has created the world's largest life sciences company." Skipping down, "Hoechst and Rhône have both sought to move away from their traditional industrial chemical activities in recent years in favor of the more lucrative life sciences, a term used to describe pharmaceuticals and farm chemicals businesses." Another element concerning Hoechst, and bear in mind again that the former IG Farben had profound corporate relations and interlocking capital participation and directorates with various key American corporations that discussed in, among other programs, Uncle Sam and the Swastika and RFA Program Number 2. Also very close connections between IG Farben and the Bormann Flight Capital Organization that we're going to talk more about in just a minute. We're going to review a section of a pair of half-hour segments entitled The Right to Die Movement, because Hoechst has also developed a euthanasia drug at Michigan State University in the United States. That euthanasia drug is to be used on animals, but it has also been patented for use on humans in Europe. It's a pretty safe bet that should euthanasia become standard operating procedure in the U.S., as some are pushing for it to be, then the Hoechst euthanasia drug will be licensed for use on humans in the United States. Bear in mind that IG Farben, ironically enough, made the gas for the gas chambers in World War II. The Degas company was 42.5% owned by IG Farben outright, 42.5% owned by Degussa, which had significant capital participation in it by IG Farben. Or perhaps it was that Degussa had capital, was partially owned by Degas. I believe it was the Degas subsidiary. It's basically controlled by IG Farben, some disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding. The IG did control the Degesh subsidiary. The following segment comes from a pair of half-hour segments entitled The Right to Die Movement. One of the German industrial institutions which had some of the most profound connections to American industry and finance, and which in turn was centrally involved with the Third Reich's war-making capacity, as well as with the political elevation of Hitler, was the IG Farben Company, Interessengemeinschaft Farben Industry, the German dyestuffs and chemical industry. That gigantic company was broken up into four companies at the end of World War II, although basically the IG has continued to function. I'm going to repeat an article as the last item in this broadcast that I read in an earlier segment entitled Fascism, Eugenics, and Euthanasia. Actually, those two half-hour segments are available from Spitfire. Research credit on the following goes to a listener who researched this article, I should say, from the San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, December 31st of 1996. One of the companies that IG Farben was broken up into was the Hoechst Company, that's H-O-E-C-H-S-T, Hoechst AG, was one of the member companies of IG Farben. And I would note in this context that Hoechst has basically financed the development of a euthanasia drug at Michigan State University. This drug was licensed initially for euthanizing animals and for use in Europe, but it has been reserved in terms of its patents for euthanizing human beings as well. And I would note that IG Farben was the company, an IG subsidiary, was the company that made the Zyklon B, the gas that was used to exterminate the Jews in the concentration camp. So there's an ironic, potentially ironic historical coincidence here of Hoechst AG's development of a euthanasia drug at Michigan State University. The San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, December 31st of 1996, has the following to say. This from the Science and Technology pages. This article is entitled, Euthanasia Drug Patent Includes Use on Humans. The first patent for a euthanasia drug combination with potential human use, developed by Michigan State University with research money from a giant German chemical company, has been granted in Europe. In April, the European Patent Office granted an application filed by the university for a, quote, euthanasia composition, unquote, originally intended for animals, which was developed by its scientists with more than $350,000 in research grants from American subsidiaries of the German company Hoechst AG. Though the patent applies to killing, quote, mammals, unquote, such as dogs and horses, it would also allow the drug compound to be used for human beings in any European Economic Community nation that legalizes doctor-assisted suicide or euthanasia, patent documents show. University officials acknowledged that they worded the European patent on their euthanasia compound to include humans to cover the possibility of legalization. But, they now say, they have no intention of allowing anyone to use the drugs for that purpose. I would add that that may change in time if some of the pressures that I am afraid will come to bear do indeed come to bear with the results that I am afraid of. Again, beware the slippery slope.
That slippery slope, again, the slide toward euthanasia that is evident in various places, including and especially the United States, something that I've been discussing and will continue to discuss. By the way, I misspoke myself. The old IG Farben company, the German dyestuffs industry, that is an interesting play on words there. Dye, we refer to D-Y-E as in clothes dye. Farben is the German word for color. In World War II, and to a certain extent since, the German dyestuffs industry had become the German dyestuff, spelled D-I-E-S-T-U-F-F-S. And again, the three major companies that came out of IG Farben, Hoechst, Bayer, and BASF, are not only close to the various powerful American corporate interests that helped to elevate fascism, something we'll talk about later in the program, time permitting, but they also are very close to the Bormann Flight Capital Organization that I've discussed. Before the Nazi collapse in World War II, 750 corporate fronts were set up by the Nazis, and the wealth that they had acquired and looted from Europe was basically spirited out to these 750 corporate fronts in neutral countries for safekeeping. That was the third major capital flow that I spoke about in a very important pair of half-hour segments entitled 20th Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow. For those who see the the Bormann Organization as something weird or arcane. It is neither. It is the culmination of the five major capital flows of the 20th century, and it is indeed the economic component of the Third Reich gone underground. We're going to review a couple of key portions of the definitive text on the Bormann Organization. That book is entitled Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart Incorporated. It's authored by Paul Manning, M-A-N-N-I-N-G. The book was copyrighted in 1981. Paul Manning, by the way, was a colleague of Edward R. Murrow's and Walter Cronkite's, and he helped cover the war in Europe for CBS News. At one point, he covered the air raids into Western Europe, and in order to do that, he had to train as a waist gunner on a B-17 because the planes couldn't carry any extra poundage, and he actually was credited with shooting down an ME-109 in combat. Of the relationship between Hoechst, which is now, again, a former member of the IG, which has now patented that euthanasia drug, and the other two member companies from the former IG, and their relationship with Martin Bormann and the Bormann Flight Capital Organization and their doings worldwide, Paul Manning wrote as follows. Again, this is in 1981. By 1956, the three major multinationals, Hoechst, BASF, and Bayer, reshaped from the 159 companies within Germany that had comprised IG Farben, were generating record profits for the original 450 major Farben stockholders who had organized themselves into the IG Farben Stockholders Protective Committee in Bonn. The big three went on expanding, tripling capitalization in 1956 from investment funds that poured in from the interlocking companies established in safe haven countries by Martin Bormann and Hermann Schmitz. There was a return, more vigorous than ever, of the huge monolithic industrial multinationals that dominated the German economy before and during World War II. Each of these three spin-offs from IG Farben today does more business individually than did Farben at its zenith, when its corporate structure covered 93 countries. BASF and Bayer individually boast worldwide sales of nearly $10 billion annually, while Hoechst, now the world's largest chemical company, generated $16.01 billion in worldwide sales in 1980. Each does more business than EI, DuPont, and Nemours with sales of $9.4 billion. And skipping down, together, these three multinationals assure permanent prosperity for the original 450 Farben stockholders, their banks, and the shadowy shareholders of the Bormann Organization in South America, who guard and vote the Hermann Schmitz Trust Fund through intermediaries at the annual meetings of BASF, Bayer, and Hoechst. And still later, Manning writes of the two-tiered structure of the German economy, with the above-board major German corporate names that have become household words, and beneath it, the shadowy Bormann Organization, again, an institution that I believe is going to prove to be the decisive element in human affairs. And if people think that's arcane or weird, let's take a look at what corporate Germany is doing on the international stage. And bear in mind that wherever you see a major German corporation engaging in any sort of activity, you are looking at, beneath the surface, the Bormann Organization, and beyond that, the Third Reich, one of the more remarkable accomplishments in human history, literally the Third Reich gone underground. So bear that in mind whenever you see a major German corporation at work. That's what you're looking at. Returning to Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, about the Bormann Organization's control over the German corporate economy, we read, as for Martin Bormann, by the way, this is in 1981 that Manning was writing, as for Martin Bormann, this now elderly recluse is ever a keen watcher and manipulator in the silent, gigantic struggles among worldwide industrial and financial powers. Atop an organizational pyramid that dominates the industry of West Germany through banks, voting rights enjoyed by majority shareholders in significant cartels, and the professional input of a relatively young leadership group of lawyers, investment specialists, bankers, and industrialists, he is satisfied that he achieved his aim of helping the fatherland back on its feet. To ensure continuity of purpose and direction, a close watch is maintained on the profit statements and management reports of corporations under its control elsewhere. This leadership group of 20, which is in fact a board of directors, is chaired by Bormann, but power has shifted to the younger men who will carry on the initiative that grew from that historic meeting in Strasbourg on August 10, 1944. Old Heinrich Müller, former head of the Gestapo, chief of security for the Nazi Party in South America, the NSDAP in South America, is the most feared of all, having the power of life and death over those deemed not to be acting in the best interests of the organization. Some still envision a Fourth Reich, This is but the dream talk of aging adventurers who will soon pass from the mortal scene. By the way, I would add, that's Manning speaking in 1981. I don't think that's dream talk of aging adventurers at all. They may be aging, but they certainly have put their dreams into effect, and I believe that barring significant change and perhaps action on the part of members of the listening audience who should get up off their you-know-whats, then their dream will become a reality. Returning to the Manning text. What will not pass is the economic influences of the Borman organization, whose commercial directives are obeyed almost without question by the highest echelons of West German finance and industry. Quote, all orders come from the shareholders in South America, unquote, I have been told by a spokesman for Martin Borman. Note again, the Borman control over corporate Germany. Note again, with Hoekstra and Rhône Poulenc merging to become the largest life sciences company in the world, with Deutsche Bank merging with Bankers Trust or acquiring Bankers Trust to become the largest financial institution on earth. This is something that is not to be regarded lightly. We're going to return to a book that I have talked about in the past. This is an obscure book put out by National Vanguard Books. That is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, arguably the most important domestic American Nazi group. The same publisher, by the way, that puts out the Turner Diaries that came into national prominence in the wake of the Oklahoma City bombing. Serpent's Walk was put out by National Vanguard Books and is copyrighted 1991. And this book is about a Nazi takeover of the United States by the descendants of the SS who put together a huge flight capital organization that begins investing in, among other things, the American media. And then they infiltrate the U.S. Army, and after a biological warfare attack of ostensibly Russian origin using genetically engineered viruses that wipes out much of the U.S. population, martial law is declared, and the Nazis, the descendants of the SS, go assume control over the United States. I have stated in the past, and in particular in a half-hour segment entitled A Review and Analysis of Serpent's Walk, that I do not believe this book is the novel it purports to be. I believe this book is a blueprint and a manifesto, a blueprint for what is going on today and what the Underground Reich plans on doing and what they will succeed in doing if people don't get busy. This book, Serpent's Walk, is authored by Randolph D. Calverhall, C-A-L-V-E-R-H-A-L-L, and is put out by National Vanguard Books, P.O. Box 330, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946. And again, an extreme caveat in dealing with National Vanguard Books. This is not the book club of the month. This is the publishing arm of the largest American Nazi group. The Serpent's Walk book is summed up as follows on the back cover. The good guys win sometimes. Not always, of course. They lost big in the Second World War. That war was a victory for communists, Democrats, and Jews, but everyone else lost, including millions of GIs who were told that they were killing Germans and Japanese in order to make the world a decent place for their children to grow up, only to see things in America go from bad to much, much worse in the decades after the war. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. Look what happened to the communists of Eastern Europe in the 1990s. Could the same thing happen to their erstwhile World War II allies in America? Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans, who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. Well, again, a savvy listener will see in that the Borman Flight Capital Organization a reality. And again, I do not believe that this book is the novel it purports to be. I believe it is a blueprint for what is going on and what will go on unless it is stopped. In a pair of half-hour segments entitled German Corporate Acquisitions in the United States, I discussed the growing German control over American publishing. In fact, German corporations, in particular Bertelsmann, about whom we will say more in a minute, and the von Holtzbrinck Company have effective control over American publishing. Bertelsmann, with its purchase of Random House Incorporated, now has a sales volume over double the nearest English-language publishing competitor, and the von Holtzbrinck Company, owning St. Martin's Press, Henry Holt, and Farrar Giroux Strauss, Strauss, among other publications, also the publisher, by the way, of Scientific American. The von Holtzbrinck Company, whose founder joined the Nazi Party in 1931 and employed liberal numbers of SS men in his post-World War II enterprises, is also a dominant interest in American publishing. Along with Bertelsmann, and bearing in mind the relationship between the Bormann Organization and major German corporations, more about Bertelsmann and its continued forays and increased activity in the American publishing business. The San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, October 7th of 1998, had the following article by Charlie McCollum, M-C, capital C-O-L-L-U-M. It's headlined, Partnership Creates Online Bookselling Behemoth. In one of the biggest deals in the brief history of e-commerce, German media giant Bertelsmann AG will pay $200 million for a 50% stake in BarnesandNoble.com, the online arm of Barnes & Noble. The partnership creates a book-selling powerhouse that will compete with Amazon.com, which is by far the largest online bookseller. Skipping down, Bertelsmann, which has long indicated it intended to take on Amazon.com, is the world's largest publisher of English-language books. Its holdings include Bantam, Doubleday, Dell, and Random House Incorporated, America's biggest book publisher, with an author roster that includes John Grisham and Michael Crichton. It also owns Doubleday Direct Incorporated, the top U.S. book club group, as well as Arista and RCA Records. Bear in mind the Serpent's Walk scenario of the Bormann Organization, which is basically what they're talking about in Serpent's Walk, gaining control of the American opinion-forming media. They now have effective control and are increasing their control over publishing, which means that corporate Germany, and through behind that the Bormann Group, the Third Reich gone underground, now has effective control of what educated Americans are going to know about the world. And what uneducated Americans are going to know about the world is going to come from educated Americans. And again, I cannot stress this point too strongly. I know you've heard about the Bormann Organization before. I know you've heard about Serpent's Walk. As I've been speaking about these books in the last couple of years, the reality that I believe was there is now manifesting itself. And again, those German corporations, Bertelsmann and von Holtzbrinck, now have effective control over American publishing. And what educated Americans are going to know about the world, the Second World War, Germany, the Holocaust, the whole nine yards, is going to come from corporate Germany. And what everybody else in this country is going to know about the world will come from those educated Americans. You are looking at the single most important element of the Serpent's Walk scenario coming to pass. More about Bertelsmann and Barnes & Noble. Research credit on this to a listener who emailed this to me, and this quotes a statement made on the American Booksellers Association site, which is www.bookweb.org. Quote, the American Booksellers Association, or ABA, considers the purchase of Ingram Book Company by Barnes & Noble Incorporated to be a devastating development that threatens the viability of competition in the book industry and limits the diversity and availability of books to consumers. Skipping down, Barnes & Noble, a $3 billion company and the largest U.S. book retailer, recently entered into an alliance with the $14 billion media giant German-owned Bertelsmann AG. Ingram Book Company is the largest book wholesaler in the United States, with over $1 billion in sales to independent bookstores and other competitors of Barnes & Noble. So with Barnes & Noble purchasing the largest American book distributor, Ingram Book Company, the largest book wholesaler, and with it now heavily involved with Bertelsmann, with a sales volume already of twice the nearest American English language publisher, and along with von Holtzbrinck, the SS-connected von Holtzbrinck company, they dominate American publishing. Again, the Serpent's Walk scenario is now emerging into full-blown reality. Other segments that listeners can pick up from Spitfire include a pair of half-hour segments, again, about German corporate acquisitions in the United States, such as Daimler-Benz purchase of Chrysler. Also, the half-hour segment called Review and Analysis of Serpent's Walk, and the half-hour segment called The Coming of the European Monetary Union. More about the coming to pass, the coming to reality of Serpent's Walk on the other side of this program. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.